Hello, my name is Robert Bjarnason. I'm from the Citizens Foundation in Iceland. The Citizens Foundation is a non-profit organization that was founded at the end of 2008 and is a direct result of the crash, of the economic crisis that happened in Iceland in 2008. As you probably, many of you know, then Iceland was one of the first countries that got really badly hit by the economic crisis. Basically, overnight, all the commercial banks in the country went bankrupt. People did not know if they could actually access their cash machines to get their money out. It was a total chaos. And what happened is that as a result of this, people who had been living a rather comfortable life suddenly asked themselves, what have those politicians we voted been doing for all this time to actually make the situation happen? So we decided, as a group of people, group of friends, that that we all come from the internet business. We decided to try to create both technologies and processes that would use the internet to empower people to have more influence on what the political representatives were doing, and basically focusing on improving democracy through technology. And it's important that this opportunity that opened up in the crisis, we try to look at the positive sides of a crisis like this. I guess the same thing is happening here in Spain, but there's an opportunity to actually make some changes. And hopefully those changes are going to be for good. I'm going to talk a little bit about, in general, the citizen participation in Iceland, how that is progressing, and specifically about our new constitution that has been now in development over the past year or so. So Iceland is it's not a tiny country, but we have very few people living there. There's only 330,000 people in the whole country. And the country has the highest internet penetration in the world. 93% of people in Iceland actually use the internet or have used the internet to some extent. Even like my grandparents use it, and you know, they're on Facebook, and it's you know, quite unique that you have a whole range of people from both young people and old people who are so well sort of connected. And it's a good place for trying out new different things, because it's easy to get introduced new things to people, even like word of mouth is easy. You know, as soon as something new is and exciting is happening in the society, then everybody knows about it in a few days or sooner, especially with the internet. So and basically as I said earlier, the crisis created an opportunity for trying out something new and the new ways of giving people access to power. We started in the Citizens Foundation, we actually started, our first project was called Shadow Parliament, and was basically connected to the national parliament, where we were taking information from the Icelandic parliament and giving people the opportunity to comment and take a bit more active part in what's happening in the parliament. This was a test project, and not a lot of people participated, but it was a very valuable experience, because our next project we did was called and it's called Better Reykjavik. And Better Reykjavik is an website application that allows people to participate and come up with ideas about what decisions should be made for the local city. And it's important that when you look at participation, to get people interested in participating, doing it on a local level, where you're doing it in a city, is actually probably a good place to start, to get people interested and used to using those sort of tools and actually taking more active part. Because when you compare what's happening on a national level, there's a lot of things happening on the national level that a lot of people are not that interested in. But if you do it on a city level, where you're dealing with schools, you're dealing with health services, you're dealing with fixing your street and parks and things like that, those are all issues that are quite close to people's hearts. And people are actively interested in many of those things. We opened the website a week before the last city election, which was in 2010. And we offered all of the political parties a website. A website where people could come up with ideas, prioritize those ideas, and most importantly, debate those ideas. Because ideas are interesting, but even more interesting is why it is a good idea or why it is a bad idea. This was very successful, but only with one of the political parties. Only the best party, which was a brand new party that was offering itself in the last city election, they started out as sort of a joke party. There was no politicians in this party. So they're comedians, punk rockers, and generally people who are not connected to politics in any way. And their campaign was very much based on, for example, their main campaign promise was that they promised that when they got into power, and if they would get into power, they would break all their campaign promises right away. That was the first thing they would do. And all sorts of things like that were sort of, you know, more sort of comedy than actually a political campaign. So what they did, as soon as we offered them to use this Better Reykjavik website, they basically started to, they put it on their main website. In all interviews that they did, they talked about it and basically said, you know, to the people, go to the website, put in the ideas that you think that we should focus on, and help us prioritize what's the most important thing for the city to actually do. And we had over 40% of the voters in Reykjavik participated in this process, where we had over 1,000 ideas were created in a matter of 10 days. And many of those ideas actually were then implemented as promised. Even if they had promised to break their own campaign promises, they did listen to the ideas that were coming from the people. There was a lot of people that were skeptical about this. They said, people are just going to put in ideas that are going to be very expensive, and we're never going to be able to afford it, and we can't really trust the people with so much direct power. Those people were proven wrong. There was all sorts of ideas that were added, and many of the ideas were actually for saving money on different things. And the situation now, the best party won the election by a landslide. They got over 40% of the vote. And they are now in power, and they made Better Reykjavik an official part of the Reykjavik city administration. So now, every month, at the end of every month, the top ideas in 10 categories are actually go directly into processing by the city. And if it's possible for the city to implement, then what the people want is implemented. But even if an idea, for example, comes in that's not possible to implement for some reason, the system handles the communication to let people know why it's not possible to implement this idea. Soon have some few screenshots. Obviously, it's all in Icelandic, but it's basically a list of ideas and looking at the ideas from different angles. We have like the top ideas of the past 7 days. Always show like also random ideas, and it's a relatively simple user interface. I just want to talk about this screen a bit, because the discussion in Iceland at the time was very argumentative. People were arguing a lot about different things. So we thought, how are we going to make the website work? So instead of having arguments, can we create a debate where people are actually debating the issues in a constructive way. So we did a relatively simple thing, which was to split the screen in two. So on the left side of the screen, people who are supporting the idea, they add their points and arguments for the idea on the left side. And people who oppose it, they put their argument on the right side. And this has worked incredibly well, even if it's very simple, that instead of arguing where one person says, blah, 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 and the other person says, oh, no, you're wrong, people have to actually put constructive points what why the idea is bad or why it's good. We have a service called Your Priorities, which is actually the service that runs the Better Reykjavik website. And we have a free website for every country in the world. This is a sort of a debate platform. And all the software is open source, and anybody can use it for their own cities or communities. And we have projects now in Italy, we have projects in America. Somebody contacted me from Portugal yesterday. People here from Spain have been in contact. And we're hoping that as many people can use our experience as possible. There's some screenshots of, at the top you see the countries of the world, and if the country is blue, that means that somebody has added some ideas in that category. We went to a conference in Greece at the end of 2010, and where we introduced this concept, and we had already a few thousand people in Greece that participated over a few weeks period, and it was quite interesting. The top three priorities that those 2,000 Greek people came up with were the top priority was to have the church pay property taxes like everybody else. The second highest priority was to remove immunity from prosecution from the parliamentarians. And the third highest priority was to protect democracy by all means. Now I'm going to talk a bit about the constitution process in Iceland. One of the things that people were asking about the most during when the crisis happened was if the constitution could be improved to make sure that this was not happen at least at us badly again. And we have a website, a debate platform specifically for the constitution, which those screenshots are from. And the process started with the so-called pots and pans revolution in Iceland, where people basically went to the street and they were protesting. They didn't even know what they were protesting. They were just protesting why we were in that situation. And they were protesting the bankers, the government, similar, I guess, as here in Spain. But there was one main argument that people kept on saying, we need a new constitution. So the current Icelandic constitution is actually has not changed very much since 1944, and not even that much since 1918. Iceland only became independent from Denmark in 1944. And the constitution has changed very little. The parliament has been trying to change the constitution for 40 years. There's been a committee for 40 years trying to change it, but the parliament has been unable to change it themselves. And many Icelandic people want a more modern and a more efficient constitution to set up the principles how the country should work. The first step in the process was a national assembly where 1,000 people were randomly selected from the population, and those people met over 1 day period and set up a set of principles that should guide the constitution process. And people were sat together on tables using a certain system where everybody would discuss on each table what their priorities were, what were the most important things, you know, for them personally. And then those things were written down on special cards. And then at the end of the process, those cards were collected, and using a specific method, out of it came, for example, this. This is like a sort of a word cloud that is saying what are the sort of top concepts that came out of this. And this is like, you can see in there, well, it's an Icelandic, but it's like constitution, health service, national resources, education, equality. So this was a very important thing to actually to set the tone for how the constitution process should go forward. Then the next step was that a constitution council of 25 people was elected, and 524 people actually offered themselves to be a part of this council, and then 25 of them were elected. It was a very strong will, both by the government and the people on the council, and to give citizens a very strong voice in this process. That even if we had those 25 people that were elected to do the job, to write the new constitution, they wanted to have a very good dialogue and an effective dialogue with the citizens during the same time. And it's just some photos of how this was set up. There was a rented a hall and, you know, desks and chairs, you know, basic thing to, you know, set up something like that. And it was decided to use Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, basically as the tools to allow people to take part in the process. I think why there are more specialized tools, for example, our, like, your priorities platform, which runs by Reykjavik, which is more specific and is, in many ways, a better debate platform than Facebook. But the thing is that over 80% of Icelandic people are on Facebook. So using Facebook comments was actually a very efficient way of getting as many people to participate as possible. And but it was not an, it was not like a regular Facebook comments where people are just talking between themselves about different things. It's actually the people talking between themselves, but also talking to the council. So the people on the council were very effective, and they were online taking part in the discussion, and many of the things in the constitution either got modified, and actually some parts of the text of the constitution actually came from citizens just through using those Facebook comments. It worked really, really well. And there was also a Flickr feed, you know, photos. YouTube was used extensively for speeches and things like that. And yeah, obviously Facebook, and there was also a Twitter. They monitored Twitter to give people who were using Twitter. People don't use Twitter as much in Iceland as here in Spain, but the people who wanted to use Twitter, they could also comment on the process on Twitter, and they were being listened to by the members of the council. And the situation today is that last Saturday, the new constitution draft was put up for a non-binding referendum to the citizens of Iceland. And we had about 50% of people participated. Some people were a bit disappointed that there were not as many people who participated than 50%. But still, there may be two main reasons why there were not more people who participated. One of the reasons is that some people were basically just not that interested. We usually have over 80%, 85% of turnout on sort of national elections. But also the Conservative Party of Iceland, even if they officially supported the process and this referendum, then some of the grassroots movement in the Conservative Party basically told people to stay at home. And this is a classic thing in this process, and I guess it's the same in any country in the world where we have you know, people on the left who want to change a lot of things, and we have people on the right who want to go slower and not change things as quickly. And obviously all of those views need to be respected. But the people who actually did participate, two-thirds of them approved the constitution, or the draft that was created by the Constitutional Council should actually be used as the basis for the new constitution. There were also six specific questions that were left to people to answer, including if the national resources of Iceland should be specifically named as joint ownership of everybody in the country, if the state and the church should be separated, and if there should be more direct democracy. And the people are very positive on all those points, except that maybe the one big surprise was that people did not want to separate the Protestant church from the constitution. They still wanted to have the church as an institution. That was a surprise, but that's what the people, that's what people want, the majority of people. And just finally, then the next steps in this constitution process is that now a debate in the parliament will happen, and we also have a debate platform set up for the public to take part in that. And the old constitution of Iceland states that only parliament can change the constitution, and a new constitution needs to be ratified by two parliaments. So we have an election coming up now in March, and it's very likely that this parliament is going to ratify the new constitution. But after the election, the new parliament also needs to ratify it for it to take effect. And this is sort of a safeguard, and I believe that this is also the same in the Spanish constitution. And I think people are moderately positive that that the process will work, and we will get a new constitution sometime next year. And but it does depend on a bit how the new how the election goes, and how many people want to be more conservative, and the people who want to make big changes. So thank you. And if you have any questions, I unfortunately don't speak Spanish, so if you have questions, somebody needs to translate for me. But
la tendríais que traducir porque se la voy a tener que hacer en castellano, en catalán.
Vale. Bueno, un poco para la sala, pero también para él. Es de inteligentes aprender de los errores propios. Pero es de sabios aprender de los errores ajenos. El compañero islandés nos ha presentado un modelo que se ha intentado en Islandia, pero que no ha concluido. No ha concluido porque el poder constituido islandés continúa ejerciendo su poder y ahora tiene la sartén por el mango. Lo tiene en base a los partidos anteriores y en base a los partidos nuevos. Ambos son poder constituido. Y la pregunta va, ¿qué cree el compañero que hubiera sucedido si además de haber utilizado las nuevas tecnologías de participación directa por la ciudadanía, el pueblo islandés hubiera estado movilizado continuamente, como estuvo en el 2009, y dejó de estar seguramente por ese proceso o por lo que fuera, y porque los bancos estaban ya devolviendo el dinero a los particulares? O sea, ¿cómo podemos, qué podría haber pasado? ¿No cree el compañero que hubiera podido tener mucho más éxito un proceso constituyente independiente por parte del pueblo y sin contar con el poder constituido en ningún momento? Gracias.
Vale. Damos otra pregunta y después responde Robert, ¿vale? ¿Alguna pregunta más?
Yes, the revolution in the streets was the key for this process to start. But even if people have not been protesting in the streets since, there has been mobilization online, people were having meetings, things like that. And even if Iceland now is recovering pretty well from the crisis, there's still a lot of anger, and there's a lot of people that really want to see things changing. And yes, the process would probably happen different if there would have been continuing street protests. And the government basically, after the crisis, the government resigned, basically, and the new government took over. And this was more of sort of a left-wing government that wanted to make more changes. So the people really didn't have that big of a reason to continue to protest in the street, because the government was doing what they wanted.
Sí, es una pregunta sobre cuál fue, o sea, creo que se ha apuntado ya aquí, con lo que acabas de decir, cuál fue la reacción del gobierno a las protestas, al proceso, o sea, ¿hubo criminalización, en qué grado, hubo un apoyo institucional o no? Si hubo un apoyo institucional al proceso, o hubo criminalización, o hubo represión, y en qué grado pasaron estas cosas.
Yes, the thing is that the government did support the process, and the left wing, the left Green Party, and the Social Democrats in Iceland, they very much support this process, and they are fighting for it, and they are working on mobilizing people to support it. So, but the institutions, like the bureaucracy in Iceland, as I guess in any other country, is very resistant to change. It's very hard to get people to agree on making big changes, and it's interesting that, for example, the best party in the Reykjavik City election, when they won, they came into power and they wanted to change a lot of things quickly, but they quickly found out that actually making changes in a bureaucracy, the bureaucracy has a life of its own as an institution. And it's difficult to make changes. It was a lot harder for them to make the changes they wanted to do. I mean, it took us, for example, after the election, it took us about 9 months to actually, you know, get the Better Reykjavik website integrated into the city council, because even if the bureaucracy was not against it, it was just every step of the way, people resist change.
So we have to end with the questions. Thank you very much, Robert.
Thank you.
And